Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 71 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Today we're talking about addiction. Yeah, you heard me right. It's going to be a very, very wonderful episode. We've got a lot to share here with an expert who knows. But before we dive in there, more ways than one, I just want to make sure you know this episode of Her is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode and give us a rating and a review for this episode. I love reading these. Feedback is wonderful. Love to hear from you. So please do that after the episode. All right. It's time for Her.
Her. The podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind. Her body. Her life. It's all about Her.
You know, the title of this episode is Swimming to Sobriety, and swimming in ways that you'll never know. We're going to be talking to Nancy Stearns Burkow, and the title of the book is Dryland, One Woman's Swim to Sobriety. Yeah. And, you know, the minute I had heard about the book, while reading a New York Times piece about this, I immediately hit home because, as many of you know, I'm a triathlete, and there's something about the water. It's very healing, and it's quite a metaphor for a lot of things here. And in the New York Times piece, it was all about, as it were, swimming in the fast lane, and how a champion swimmer, someone who carries many titles in the swimming arena, went through an extraordinary journey and is here to tell us what that was all about, how we can relate to what she went through. You don't have to have addiction per se, but it's how you work it through. It's how you adapt and adjust and navigate when you get slammed with really interesting challenges, extraordinary challenges, especially when you're young. So, Nancy, welcome to the Her podcast.
Well, thank you so much. I'm really glad to be here.
So, you've written for publications for years. By the way, you're one of the best writers I've ever read, and that says a lot, quite frankly, because I'm a writer as well, including the New York Times and the rest of it. Interestingly, you've been working with Maria Shriver, having written an extraordinary book there, Brain in a Jar, A Daughter's Journey Through Her Father's Memory, and his passing with Alzheimer's. I also work with Maria Shriver on the Women in Alzheimer's project nationally, so that was very cool, too.
yeah, we've had parallel lives, I think.
I know. It's like, whoa. In 2009, you were inducted into the Athletic Hall of Fame at the University of South Florida, where you swam on a scholarship from 1982 to 1986. You were 17-time All-American National Champion and Olympic Trials Qualifier, right. Coach swimming at James Madison University, and it goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. Wow. So tell us what happened with this book, Dryland, and why we're talking about swimming to sobriety. What happened?
Well, sure. And thank you for the nice comments. I really appreciate it, especially from someone so established as yourself. So really the story is, you know, as you just mentioned, I swam in college. And then when my swimming career was over, I was faced with the question, who will I be now? So I tried to reinvent, and I did. I was successful in reinvention. Invent myself as a land person. So I joined the Peace Corps, and I went to Kenya, and then I taught English in South Korea. I worked as a journalist in South Korea. And what seemed to work for me, I realize now at a distance it didn't really work, but I turned myself into the party girl. You know, I'd have drinks with people in Nairobi. I'd have drinks with GIs on leave from the DMZ in Seoul. And I was just out there having a lot of fun. And basically, I had turned my liquid addiction of swimming into a liquid addiction with alcohol that went into my body. And this went on for a number of years, 30 to be precise. And after I had my child, I realized I was depressed. And I did not drink during my pregnancy. Some people ask me that, but I did not drink alcohol during my pregnancy. I realized I was depressed and I was taking antidepressants and I was worried about keeping my child alive in this really scary world. And I just started drinking more and more and more. You know, getting through the day, it was like a martini was a trophy, a swimming trophy. I could hold it over my head and just be like, I made it through another day. I'm winning again. And then, let's see, in 2014, we moved to Abu Dhabi in the Middle East. And that's where the dry land comes in. In Abu Dhabi, I really amped up my drinking. I thought, oh, well, there's plenty to be afraid of here, you know, this terrorist insurgents in neighboring countries. So I have good reason to drink. I have good reason to be afraid. I've earned these drinks, too. But looking around at the landscape, literally the desert, and the Bedouin people who live there and how they live their lives without alcohol, I started to realize I don't have to keep up this self-medicating. There are other ways to live. And I went dry in the desert. And that's the story. And I've been dry for 2 years. Although I'm back in the pool.
I love that dry in the desert. You know, I mean, you know, come on, you're playing with me here.
I know, you'd think it's a metaphor, but it's the truth.
I know.
I really went dry in the desert.
Oh, my God. What I read, you know, this book, by the way, was just spellbinding. I just loved it at multiple levels because there was quite a story that went behind it. It was really quite extraordinary on the overall. The first thing I noticed was that I don't think there's any question that you had great disappointment about this whole issue around the Olympic trials.
Okay.
I mean, explain that, because I personally think, now tell me if I'm wrong, that disappointment, you know, was probably a real piece of your depression.
I think that's absolutely right. And I may have even been depressed as a young woman, but I had so many endorphins and so much adrenaline from my training and my winning. So I was constantly getting high naturally with my training. So when my senior year, so I trained pretty much my whole life hoping I could go to the Olympics. My senior year of college, I knew what the Olympic qualifying time was for the 50-meter freestyle for the 88 Korea Games, and it was 1986. And I did everything I could to make that cut. And in my last race of my career, I did it. I made the cut. But also, I hurt my shoulders through that year of training. I overtrained, if anything, and lifted weights. I mean, I weighed 135, and I was bench pressing 180. I mean, I went too far. And then I paid the price, and I had shoulder surgery. And back then, it wasn't arthroscopic. It was, you know, a full rotator cuff tear. They opened the whole shoulder up and glued me back together. And then it was over. You know, and I was graduating from college. There was no professional swimming. There was no more options for me. So I, you know, being a sprinter, I like flailed in the other direction and went over to Africa as a Peace Corps volunteer. So, you know, things sort of came crashing down. And then, and my journey as a land mammal, other things started happening. A friend was murdered in Korea. I had a sad love affair in Tanzania with a Turkish man. And these are the adventures that are in the book, as well as that run along parallel to my journey to quitting drinking. But I do think that you hit on it, that extreme disappointment with not making the Olympics and then that complete loss in identity. I was sort of stranded.
And you know, what's also important to note is that alcoholism ran in your family.
That is right. That is right. The weird, well, not weird, but the sad coincidence is that my mother's mother died at the age of 42 from cirrhosis. She must have been drinking a lot to die that young. And she died on the day I was born. So my mother was...
God, I remember reading that, and I'm thinking, you got to be flipping kidding me.
I know. I wish I was kidding about all this stuff, but it is real. And so it does. Like, Alzheimer's runs in my family, and so does alcoholism. And I thought I was going to be a comedy writer at some point in my life, but, oh, well, genetics and disease got in the way. But I do think I try to write about it. And I have a lot of sense of humor about myself. Of course, the subject is very serious. But, yeah.
So what was it like to have to turn it around? I remember, you know, here you were, a lean, mean fighting machine as a, you know, as more of an Olympic level, you know, swimmer. And then after all those years of just, I mean, we're talking like 30 years of being literally out of the water. Right. And toasting your body with alcoholism. What I was reading, what it was like for you to be in that first aquathon, whatever the hell that thing was called,
aquathon.
In Abu Dhabi.
Yeah,
I know. Really, seriously, like, what is that? And you know how you felt as you, you know, were amazed at just going back in history and remembering what your body had used to be like when you were a competing swimmer. Right. And now for the first time in a gazillion years, you're back at it again, but boy, things are different. A lot of people just run the opposite direction, quite frankly.
Right.
And they would just say, there's just like no way that, you know, I could possibly do this. What was it in you that gave you the harumph to be able to do this? Seriously.
Well, that's the central question. And I think that sort of speaks to the subhead of the book, One Woman's Swim to Sobriety. Now, and here's where the metaphor comes in. I didn't really swim to sobriety, but what I did was use the techniques that I learned from swimming and competition and applied them to my recovery. Well, like focusing straight ahead down the lane before my race, just keeping everything out of my peripheral vision and focusing on what it is I have to do.
So no distractions.
No distractions. So, but you know, giving up drinking is actually easier in Abu Dhabi because it's not everywhere. In our culture, alcohol is everywhere. It's reinforced. Let's go to happy hour. Come over for drinks. It's the grocery store. It's on the billboards. It's on the radio. Now, I didn't have to deal with that in Abu Dhabi. So it was almost like I had the tunnel vision that I needed by the country, as in addition to by my own tunnel vision. But coming back to the U.S., I started to have all those distractions. And I'd be at the grocery store walking down an aisle, and I just imagined it as a lane in swimming. And just said, I've got to get to the other end. I don't have to run, but I've got to get to the other end and keep all the wine and the beer to the left and right of me and just get to the other side. So that is sort of the way that I tweaked my brain to think about avoiding alcohol and getting sober. So it wasn't really a swim, but it was a technique to put alcohol out of my range.
I think it's absolutely brilliant. And share with all of our Her podcast listeners, what was the aha moment that got you started on the journey to sobriety?
Yeah.
What was going on in your life at that time?
Okay. Well, I love to, you know, I love to play with words. So I like to say that my come to Jesus moment happened in a Muslim country because
Go
it
figure.
Did. And with the help of Islam, too. I also feel like the book lets people know what it's like to live in a Muslim community. So I think that's another aspect to the book. The setup for the book and what really happened in real life is that I was taking antidepressants. I still do. And I ran out in Abu Dhabi, and I knew I had to go to the doctor and see if I could get a refill. And I waited till all the pills had run out, kind of, you know, just like a bullet coming at me, and I didn't do anything to stop it. So I went to the hospital. That's where you go in Abu Dhabi. Everybody's at the hospital. There's no doctor's offices outside of the hospitals. So I went, I found a GP, went in to talk to her about giving me a refill of my antidepressant. And I was afraid the whole time that she was going to start asking questions about my health. They took my blood pressure. It was off the charts. They took my weight, 70 pounds more than when I swam. And I was freaking out.
70 pounds.
70
wow.
pounds from that drinking. And so the whole time I'm waiting to get these antidepressants, I'm realizing I'm in real trouble. I'm sick. And I just got it into my head while I was waiting to get this prescription, which I did finally get, but not without a lot of drama. I said, I got to change it. I got to change it right now. I cannot continue getting up in the morning and being hungover, but at the same time praying for happy hour to come. I can't live like this anymore. And on that day, I called my husband and said, it's over between me and you, but it's over between me and alcohol. And please help me. And it starts now. And I didn't have an AA meeting or a physician or anything. Just the love of my family, sitting in our living room that night, literally watching Lawrence of Arabia and going to bed and sweating that night, throwing up in the morning, and 5 solid days of withdrawal. And I got to the other side. I mean, I'm always going to be aiming for the other side of this, but I can tell you 2 years later, best decision I ever made. I feel fantastic. My weight is back down, and I'm swimming again.
Interesting. Yeah, I saw the picture of you, and you've, of course, you know, are now placing in the Masters swimming competitions, which doesn't surprise me in the least, to say the least. And you look great there with your little swimming Masters partners
yeah.
in that picture in the New York Times piece. But, you know, this aha moment is interesting because it's got to be extremely powerful and meaningful if it's going to be sustainable.
Right.
How worried were you about relapse?
Wow. I kept thinking in the subsequent weeks after I made the decision, you know, I'd feel better if I took a drink right now. I could wait until I get back to the United States and do it there. Wouldn't that be easier if I had my doctor and I could go to AA and I could do these other things? But then I kept thinking, no, I have one day in. Now I have 2 days. I'm up on this thing. I'm winning this thing, to use my swimming and competitive terminology. I'm on top right now, and I've got to stay there. And it wasn't easy, but I just felt so sort of maniacal about it. I even, you might have remembered this from the book, but I even imagined myself, Burkaw is in lane 4, Chardonnay is in lane 3, vodka's in lane 4, and I have to keep beating them. These are my enemies. And
there's a visual for you.
Yeah, that was, I did rely on those visuals. Like, I had to see the race in my mind. It's Nancy Burkaw versus alcohol instead of Nancy Burkaw versus swimmer or men. There's certainly a lot of men in my book that I was up against. And I just decided I'm winning this thing.
Interesting. And so what are the challenges of staying on track now? You know, you've gotten back in the water. You're now, you know, swimming competitively in Masters. This has become a piece of your recovery, to say the least.
Right.
What are the big challenges for you right now?
Well, there's two times that I want alcohol. I won't take it, but my brain goes, oh, wouldn't it be nice to have some? And those two occasions are when I'm celebrating something. So, like, when I finished my book, I was like, oh, how nice it would be to have a glass of champagne. And I'm like, of course I can't have that. And it wouldn't be nice. It would undo everything I just wrote. But that moment of celebration, you know, we all like that. Oh, it's my birthday. I'll have a glass of wine. So I missed that. And then on the other side of that spectrum, when I'm really low and I'm really scared, in fact, like when I'm going to do an interview with somebody important on a podcast like yourself, I think.
Oh, no.
No. I think, oh, I'm scared. Maybe I should have a drink. I won't, but I am aware of myself thinking those things. So it's extreme highs make me want to celebrate. Extreme lows make me want to hide. And I can work through them. I found out that I'm actually more brave without the alcohol. That was pretend brave. I can actually manage these things just fine. I just have to.
I like it. I love it. Pretend brave. You know, it's interesting. In all the years I've spent working in the field of addiction, this started with the work that I did with food addiction, because as you're well aware, you just hop on, you know, you sort of cross addict or transfer addict from one to the other oft times. But one of the things that's fascinating about this is that the Achilles heel of addiction is a real issue with stress resilience. And that is, when something hits you, there's a lot of self-soothing that goes on.
That's right.
There's a default to self-soothing. And clearly, with a genetic predisposition toward addiction, you know, it's pretty obvious what you're going to self-soothe with. Other people just, you know, immediately hit it with the Georgetown cupcakes. But, you know, or drugs or,
right,
you know,
well,
whatever.
Right.
But you know what I'm saying? There's always some self-soothing, or, you know, they do the sex addiction thing or shopping or, you know, whatever. But stress resilience is really at the heart of this. And, you know, in a way, you ended up, I'm just kind of thinking about this out loud now after having this joyful, you know, episode talking to you, is that, you know, you knew stress resilience. No one in their flippin' right mind gets up on that whiteboard and dives into the pool, you know, after they do the little, you know, and off you go without knowing what the heck stress resilience is, because, you know, you're sitting there, you are doing highly disciplined training. Your behind has to be out of bed and you're doing your thing early in the morning. You're working it. You're breaking records. You're qualifying. I mean, that's a huge amount of stress. Most people would, you know, run, race the opposite direction before they even came within 20 feet of that level of stress. But you lived it.
True.
And what's really interesting here is that you're drawing upon that same strength. See, you use your strengths to be able to, you know, get yourself sober and then stay that way. And those strengths were built in you, that athleticism, just as much as the alcoholism was, you know, through your gene line. Fascinating. And so one kind of helped the other in a beautiful way. Does that make sense to you?
That makes absolute sense. And I think you're exactly right. I think all of that conditioning of my mind and my body and my obsession with making that Olympic trials cut time, I was just able to reestablish that as a way to fight off stress and fear in another way. Because I was a sprinter, and you have to have nerves of steel to get up there against women who are tremendous physical specimens and basically do the equivalent of a 50-yard dash on land. It's just all-out, wild, fast swimming against really tough competitors, and it comes down to hundredths of a second who's going to win. So if you can't manage your stress on the swim block, you know, you can't be in that race. And so when the stakes are high about anything, I feel like I can call upon that history and apply it to whatever I'm facing. Now, alcohol got in the way for a long time. I thought that was what was making me stand up and be strong. But when I took that away, I realized I really am still that 18-year-old girl in that Speedo on the block, ready to beat anyone standing next to me. And just as a grown-up.
Oh, I just think that's fabulous. Well, it's sort of like, yeah. I'm sure what you've said to yourself, Nancy, is if I can do that, I can do this.
Yes.
So and if I can stand up on that damn block and, and you know, rock and roll for, for the 50 meters, for crying out loud, I can most definitely do this because they're both hard. They're both, both challenging. You know, they both rip your soul out, you know, in terms of the level of stress, but damn it, I can do it. You know, it's the swim becomes a metaphor for your recovery.
That's right. And I have found, I have learned this one thing about myself. I don't like anything unless it's challenging. And swimming taught me that. Writing, you know, I've been working on this book and some of the stories in it for 30 years. I mean, this particular section, the addiction section, for two. But, you know, if it's not hard, I'm not interested.
I love it. I love it. Well, you know, you are, after all, you know, an athlete at heart. So what are your dreams now? What do you want to do? You know, go to the swimming place. What's what's next on your plate?
Well, I am happy to say that I am feeling very strong and I feel quite fit. I'm not much of a land athlete. I try yoga and I'm going to keep trying because it's really hard for me. And again, I like to do things that are hard. So I'm working on different sports and using them as a as an outlet, as fitness. I mean, I'm really, really interested in my own health now, which is such a relief after not being interested for so long. So I'm back swimming. You have to know, and this won't be a surprise, I do want to be the best in the U.S. or the world in the 25 meter freestyle. So the great thing about masters is you can just swim one length. You don't have to swim two or four or eight. And I'm a drop-dead sprinter, so that 25-yard race is my favorite thing. So I can't
wait to see what I can do. I want to know. What's your time? Come on.
Well, I did a 13 last weekend, 13 seconds,
show
25
off.
Yards.
Show
you asked. And
I know, seriously.
So there's here's the beauty. Here's the full circle moment. The Masters Swimming World Games are in Seoul in 2018.
You're going back home.
Exactly. Seoul was supposed to be my Olympics. So if I can make that qualifying time, I can go back to Seoul and try to be the champion there that I wanted to be. But
Nancy, I don't think there's any question that, you know, with your level of energy and your determination and focus, you will most certainly, you know, achieve your goals one way or the other. I just, you know, I want everyone to know that I'm talking to our expert for this episode is Nancy Stearns Burkhall, and that's B as in boy, E-R-C-A-W. And she is the author of just an absolutely superb book, Dry Land, One Woman's Swim to Sobriety. Now, Nancy, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you in terms of your website? Which of your websites is the best?
My website is very simple. It's dryland.co, C-O, there's no M, just dryland.co. And that's
fantastic.
That's my web blog. Everything is all there. Order the book, read my stories, blah, blah, blah. It's all there.
Absolutely.
And if people want to write and ask a question, they can reach me through that, too. I'm happy to answer any questions.
That's what I wanted to know. No question about it. That's what I wanted to know. Because I know that this hits home for so many women out there, not just for themselves, but also people they love. And you know how the world is in addiction. You know, it's just, it affects everybody. So this book is absolutely beautiful. Oh, my God. You're all going to love it out there. Nancy, I just can't thank you enough for such a wonderful episode for the Her Podcast. And again, the book is Dry Land, One Woman's Swim to Sobriety with Nancy Stearns Burkhall. Nancy, thank you for being on the Her Podcast.
Well, thank you for having me and taking such an interest in my work. It means the world to me.
Yay.
Yay.
All right, everybody. So go get the book already. Remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And then after this episode, run on over to iTunes and please, please, please leave a review and a rate because we read these and love them. Feedback is golden to us. I'm Dr. Pam Peake. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeakMD, and you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.